This is special coverage on the Park Fire from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Officials say they're 90% complete with their damage assessment of the fire. As of now, more than 500 structures have been destroyed in Butte and Tehama counties. Evacuations have been downgraded or lifted in both counties in some areas, and many people are starting to return to where the fire has burned. But officials have been warning residents that there can be hazards in those areas. NSPR's Adia White recently spoke with Lisa Almaguer, spokesperson for the Butte County Public Health Department, about what people should know about repopulating.
So we know from past fires that homes and property destroyed by fire can contain high levels of hazardous material. These can range from asbestos, oils, fire retardants, pesticides, and heavy metals. And exposure to these materials can lead to acute and chronic health effects, and they can also cause environmental impacts. So when returning home, we strongly urge people to review the health and safety precautions for reentry. This packet is available on the Butte County website, and it's also being handed out at the reentry checkpoints. And when you do return back to either homes or property that have been damaged by the fire, wear sturdy covered shoes, long pants, gloves, and again, that N95 mask.
Right, because as you mentioned, there's some extremely toxic materials there. And then as well, I think another thing with wildfire smoke that we didn't mention is it's not just air particles, correct? Like they might have, burned any structures, for example. There might be some additional toxins in that smoke as well.
Correct. And other dangers, like you mentioned, the burn and the hot ash, there's embers can be left over. There can be hot spots on your property. There can be puncture hazards that include broken pipes, exposed nails, broken glass, and also potentially explosive hazards, including propane tanks, ammunition, and solvents.
And what about the water? Is it safe to drink the water in some of these communities right now?
So for people that are served by a public water system, they should contact their water service provider for information regarding water safety. So essentially, if you pay a bill for your water, you should contact that water system directly. If their home has lost water pressure at any point during the fire, water from the tap should be considered unsafe, and they should proceed with drinking bottled water until they've spoken directly with their water system provider. And then for those who have a private well, they will need to inspect the well or have someone inspect the well for them, and then also disinfect and sample well water. And instructions for that are available on the public health website. Additional water safety information is available in the health and safety reentry packet. But proceed with caution. When in doubt, drink bottled water until you have confirmation that your water is safe to drink.
And just to dig a little bit deeper into that, how do wildfires contaminate the water systems in general?
So I am not the complete expert on that, but what I can tell you is that, wildfires burn extremely hot and they can cause damage to the lines that deliver water to your home. And some of those lines can be made of plastic, especially if they're newer, and things like benzene can get into the water from the melted plastic. I am not familiar with all the damages that can happen to a well, but again, like I mentioned, there's more information in the health and safety reentry packet, and then of course directions for people that own a private well.
That was spokesperson for the Butte County Public Health Department, Lisa Almaguer, speaking with NSPR's Adia White. And the Park Fire is still threatening more than 6,000 structures. When a fire like this hits an area, protecting homes is a main priority for firefighters. While they can't always help, many times they can, especially when communities have been able to prepare. The Butte County Fire Safe Council's mission is to assist fire-prone neighborhoods to get ready for events like this. NSPR's Ken Duvall recently spoke with Taylor Nielsen, director of the council.
Before the campfire, it was very difficult to get landowners enrolled in our projects. There was a lot of hesitancy in terms of understanding as to the benefit. And since the campfire and over the past 5 years, we've seen a big shift in terms of community members and landowners really engaging and wanting to participate, and not only with our projects, but on their own. And I think some folks may have heard, but Chief Scholin mentioned in one of his press briefings that it was a big thank you to many of the community members, both in Forest Ranch and Cohasset, that had done some of that work on their own. that probably helped save some of the homes. So we've been really encouraged to see that shift over the past 5 years of, you know, instead of reaching out to landowners and getting some resistance, now it's quite vice versa in a lot of cases in terms of landowners reaching out to us looking for assistance or guidance on what they can do on their property on their own.
And let's talk about that a little bit. What are the most important things people can do to fire harden their properties?
Yeah, folks probably hear it a lot, but the first 5 feet is incredibly important. Removing any flammable material in that first 5 feet, and then moving out from there to the first 30 feet, removing as much flammable material from there, and then that 100-foot defensible space beyond that is extremely important in terms of limbing up ladder fuels on your trees, clearing brush, taking those small but important steps really make a big difference, especially because we see a lot of the time with these wildfires, it's really the ember casts and the ember storms that cause the ignition on those homes. And so where possible, and it is difficult a lot of the time for many of our communities and community members to harden their homes, that is also another important step. While that is expensive, we're always looking for grant opportunities to help folks do that, or working with partners who may have those opportunities and giving those to landowners is another important step.
And just talking to fire experts, I know there are some things that can be done that are relatively inexpensive. Some of them require effort, others are modifications to homes. And fire screens, screening chimneys and stovepipes are two that come up an awful lot. And of course, doing things like keeping gutters clean, mm-hmm. roofs swept, things like that. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you just touched on a lot of the important points that are easy steps in terms of focusing on the home, especially keeping those gutters clean. Gutter guards are a little bit more expensive, but they are also another alternative that folks can focus on to keep those leaves and needles out of their gutters. Dual pane windows are important, if possible, to have those replaced. And then some of those inexpensive steps are really an important action to take for landowners.
There's also, and I don't know how extensively this is practiced, but I imagine it will be with new construction more and more. And that is to create a link between or a bridge between wooden fences in the house proper, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a metal gate or something like that to create a fire gap there.
Yeah, it's extremely important. I know just in the park fire, I heard one story of a firefighter having to cut away a wooden fence that was up against on fire and up against a home. And that's what saved the home. And in that case, that would be another good step for landowners to take and homeowners is putting that chain link fence as a gap between the wooden fence and the home, and wherever possible, even further out from the home, transitioning from wooden fence to chain link.
What advice would you have for a neighbor who's taking mitigation efforts and is next door to a neighbor who's absolutely not? I'm sure that comes up.
Yeah, it does come up quite a bit. If they haven't met their neighbor, then introducing themselves and asking them what their hesitations are and maybe providing some resources as to why this is important could be another step. In some cases, what we see inevitably is that folks may just not be able to. And so that's where some of our programs can step in, like our residence assistance program, which can help folks who are low income, elderly or disabled do that 100-foot defensible space. One more on that. For landowners who are able to do some of the work, we do have our CHIPR program as well. We are anticipating being able to fund that program countywide coming soon. We're waiting just on a grant agreement to be able to fund that program for the whole county. Although it is available right now in the Camp Fire and North Complex footprints. But that program essentially works if a landowner cuts and stacks brush according to the guidelines, then we will bring a contractor out at no cost to chip that material for the landowner.
That was the executive director of the Butte County Fire Safe Council, Taylor Nilsen, speaking with NSPR's Ken Duvall. And lastly, this week, NSPR's Alex Stutson has been reporting from the field in communities affected by the fire. We've been sharing those interviews with you. As you've heard, the Park Fire is far from the only fire residents in the North State have experienced or evacuated from. Several massive fires, the Dixie, Carr, North Complex, Monument and McKinney, and the Camp Fire, have all taken place in this region. While in Paradise this week, which at one point was under an evacuation warning that's since been lifted, Alex spoke with resident Gina Benavides, who lost everything in the campfire, and shares their experience with us about this fire.
Oh, God. It was like I couldn't believe how rapidly it was growing and how close it looked, you know. And I just kind of went into shock. My daughter got mad at me because I didn't get out of the house fast enough to follow her to her house in Sacramento. I just kind of couldn't move, you know, and then I started packing some stuff and I'm like, I can't do this again. If this happens again, I am not rebuilding. It was too much. Really, a lot.
And so, what were you packing up when that happened?
Oh, any meds that I had, over-the-counter and prescription, underwear, things like that, your daily necessities, my computers, my paperwork on the new house, and all that stuff, and some pictures and stuff, but I couldn't start packing up a whole bunch of stuff. It was just too much.
Sure. And so was your house put under evacuation warning?
Yes, it was.
And did you evacuate?
No, I did not.
And so, what did you do, you know, when during the time that, you know, you were under evacuation warnings, aside from prepping, were you staying at home? Were you?
Yeah, I was staying at my house and I have some real good neighbors that, you know, they weren't going to let me stay there by myself. Should anything happen, I was going with them. But still, you just sit there and wait and pray and hope, you know, please don't let this happen again. And I kind of don't think that the firefighters are going to let Paradise and Magalia burn again if they have anything to do with it.
Paradise resident Gina Benavides speaking with NSPR's Alex Stutzen. And that's today's special coverage. You can hear more interviews with evacuees, fire survivors, and other community voices on our website. We'll continue to monitor this fire and bring you any new information during All Things Considered. If you missed any of our special coverage from earlier this week, you can find it at mynspr.org or by getting our Headlines podcast. Find it on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts. Adia White, Ken Duvall, and Alex Stutzen produced this special coverage. Matt Fidler is our technical producer. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to North State Public Radio.